Do you think that the faith-based mindset is going to be going away anytime soon?
It is not going to be going away. At the same time, I realize how, and I think it would be helpful for more people to figure out the idea that faith is a dangerous concept in itself. The whole notion of holding on to certain beliefs without any supporting evidence, it's a little tricky, you know?
That particular form of faith where you believe that certain individuals have the right to have rights that other people don't have, like the ability to be able to force others to do what they want.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be your central, the biggest problem possible. Like, if we can get "I'm allowed to use violence against you" out of the picture, then the conversation mm-hmm. becomes a lot more interesting. Hey everyone, this is the Libertarian Atheist Podcast. You can find everything at libertarian-atheist.com, and make sure you're subscribing and rating on iTunes, Stitcher, whichever other podcast app you are using. If there's a podcast app that we're not on, make sure to let me know. So today I had the honor of having a guest who I've been listening to for quite a number of years, not only on his podcast, the Drunken Dallas podcast and History on Fire, but on the Joe Rogan podcast, which a lot of people, you know, you guys might have been introduced to him through there. I don't really know anyone who doesn't listen to the Joe Rogan podcast who also listens to the show. He's a man by the name of Daniele Bolelli. He's an Italian-born writer. He has a bit of an accent, but it's pretty easy to understand. He's also a martial artist, university professor, podcaster, and just all-around great dude. His most recent book is Not Afraid on Fear, Heartbreak, Raising a Baby Girl, and Cage Fighting. And in this interview, we jump right into the meat of the conversation, discussing things like religion, philosophy, as well as politics in general, and how those all coalesce together to make a specific type of worldview that people are deciding to hold on a day-to-day basis. So I hope you enjoy. Now, I've had a number of people on my show, but no one quite as knowledgeable of what is sometimes incorrectly called Eastern religions, as if they're all the same thing. But more importantly, you know, non-Abrahamic religions, right? What I find interesting is that within Abrahamic religions, you have an obsession with the historical validity of the characters and events as if they occurred, right? It's not just what Jesus said. It's that he was also a real person. It's not just the story of Exodus. It's that it actually occurred. It's not just that Muhammad, you know, at least within the stories, a ruthless warlord. It's that the mythos was the embodiment of pure truth. So I want to kind of get from you here, you know, how do these non-Abrahamic religions and philosophies, say Buddhism and Taoism, defer in that specific manner?
Their claim to the truth does not rest upon historical truth. It doesn't have to have happened for it to be justified. It's more, hey, these are some good ideas. Check them out. If you think they are good, run with them. If you don't think they're good, that's okay. But if on the other hand you're claiming that what you're saying is not just a good idea, check it out. If you're claiming that what you were saying comes straight from God, then you need to show some proof that it comes straight from God. And so you need to insist that that historical events actually happened and that guy was actually talking to God on that one day and all of that. So their claim, like, why is it that there's hardly any history within the scriptures of Taoism, Buddhism, Hinduism? These are history of ideas, you know, these are just ideas that you decide whether to run with or not. In the Judeo-Christian and Islamic tradition, there is a huge historical element because the whole thing rests upon whether those ideas written in a book actually come from God or not. And so they have to go 10 miles further into trying to emphasize that that's a big deal. Because otherwise, I mean, I agree with you. I think like some of the ideas that are in Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, if we treat them as ideas, and as such, we look at whether they work or not, that's a good way to go about it. But that's not really the religion. That's more like a philosophical approach to it. The religion is, it doesn't even matter what the idea is. The only thing it matters is, does it come from God or not? And if it comes from God, then it's good and right before we even look at the content, because it's divine.
And interestingly, going back to Abrahamic religions as a whole, you have this creation of a false history in order to create a new history that is draped in their own form of divinity and self-righteousness in order to be able to push forward their ideas. Essentially, they added extra stories to the story of Jesus Christ in order to make it seem as if the Torah, or what they would start calling the Old Testament, was predicting his coming, right? Because in Isaiah 7:14, it says, Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel, right? So what it's doing is you're webbing the story of Jesus Christ around these supposed things that were going to predict his coming. Moreover, whenever you talk about the topic of Islam, you have stories created about a baby Jesus who stated as a baby that he wasn't the Son of God. And there's kind of a predicting of a coming prophet after him, right? So by removing the Son of God aspect of Jesus Christ, you're removing some of his power from that story. And then that allows for this new prophet to come along, Muhammad, who many of his stories actually contradict the statements made in the New or in the Old Testament. But it gets to be wrapped around again in this sense of divinity, righteousness, which with that power, with the power of the Word of God, you can bring in any contradiction you want. You can say the most vile, disgusting things. You can justify the most vengeful acts, for you are the walking embodiment of God. And all the believers afterwards have to keep pushing that idea in order to justify the most obtuse, inane, and outrageous ideas.
Right. Yeah, and that's what it boils down. Then half of the conversation is about a claim to whether you are truly God's spokesperson or not, rather than what you actually have to say.
Absolutely. And when it comes to these various religions, though, I end up getting a conversation, though, where it's we try to understand whether or not the world would have been better or worse without a religion. But to me, I can't quite understand the history of humanity without religion being a part of it. It doesn't mean it's a good thing. For instance, I can't imagine the history of humanity without slavery having existed.
Right.
But it's kind of where is the trajectory of religion going with the, you know, as we discussed on the not recorded conversation, the internet age. I mean, you have religions like Mormonism, which are people are leaving in droves because there are so many absolute claims made within Mormonism about the history of mankind that are supposed to be taken literally, that people are just kind of, you know, leaving that religion behind.
Sure. I think so. The fact is, those traditions are enormously powerful for a few reasons, because one of the main needs that they fulfill is that they are extremely reassuring about those things that human beings are very stressed about, specifically what happens to you after you die, is there a meaning in life or not, you know, all of those existential questions that are highly stressful, that human beings, you know, doesn't matter how advanced we get scientifically, until you defeat death, there will always be a place for those traditions, because they will offer you, you know, unfortunately, science doesn't offer us any good answer about the afterlife or the meaning of life. So if we can't get an evidence-based answer, most people would rather get any kind of answer, you know, an answer that's based on zero evidence if needed, because it's too unsettling to live without some kind of solid answer to this stuff. So a bullshit answer is better than no answer at all, or at least that's how a lot of people would feel.
And that's one of the greater and harder aspects of trying to, I wouldn't necessarily say I'm trying to run with people and debunk religion, but I'm trying to kind of expand viewpoints of how to deal with death in general. But what I've found, though, now shockingly, is the episodes or articles that I write about dealing with mortality seem to have the least amount of viewership in general. But the ones where I'm blasting someone like Donald Trump, then those get a lot, because the question of death is, of course, the one that most of us are generally trying to run away from on a constant basis.
Of course, because it's stressful as hell and there are no good answers. So, you know, if one day we figure out a way to live forever, I think suddenly a lot of those issues become less important. But since that day is not anywhere close, then I don't see, you know, early in the 1800s, there was this tendency among scholars and more intellectual people to consider organized religion. I think that was going to slowly fade away and was just a matter of time before they disappear in the face of scientific understanding. I think that's a huge mistake. That's just simply not true. You know, you can have all the science you want, but unless you address people's deepest fears, they are going to cling to whatever it is that they need to cling. Because, you know, it's like, I don't care about you tell me how the universe works in a purely scientific manner that does not relieve my existential anxiety. Give me something to feel better, you know?
I do wonder, though, are we separating human beings into classes when we make that claim? Like, I'm capable of being able to live without the idea of a god, but all these other people, they won't be able to do it because they're too scared?
I don't think it's a matter of, like, I'm not deciding for somebody else whether they're capable or not.
Yeah.
They decide it for themselves. And their actions speak louder than, you know, it's not up to me to decide, yes, you are capable or not. I'm just in charge of my own life and where I stand. But, you know, the choices people make kind of tell you something in that regard.
And the decisions that are being made are, you know, in certain cases, the more radicalization of specific faiths that we're witnessing right now due to a number of, you know, different factors. I did this series on the topic of Islam, and one of the more interesting aspects was how much British colonialism played a part in the creation of Wahhabism, which is
right.
One of the most, you know, pernicious and vicious forms of a yeah. religion, which we can't exactly say was the most nonviolent of religions in general.
Sure. Yeah.
And kind of like going in and trying to understand that, it did anger me a little bit when I'm trying to have legitimate conversations on the topic of Islam, to that you have like one of two kind of conversations, at least in America consistently, which is the people who state that there is no problem with any religious faiths. It's all just the more radical elements. And then you have people who state, no, all Muslims are evil, yada, yada. We have to bomb these individuals.
I know, man. That's like the thing that I keep going to in every other topic. Doesn't matter even where I start from, almost. I always end up there. Is the extremely annoying tendency to be addicted to binary thinking that human beings seem to indulge in most circumstances. And you just brought a perfect example, right? Either the radical, all religions are equal bullshit, or the equally radical, all religions are all good, is just people screw them up for their own desires. Both of those are intellectually lazy positions because they try to oversimplify a situation that's not simple. And they try to, and I think it goes back to one thing. It does go back to laziness. It does go back to the fact that it's easier, because if you can repeat the same formula every time you're presented with facts, you don't have to think so hard about it rather than having to make up your mind on a case-by-case scenario. Whereas, unfortunately, reality doesn't work that way. Reality is a matter of, it's kind of like if somebody taught you how to surf, saying every time you jump onto the board and you get up and you're riding the wave, always lean heavily to the left or always lean heavily to the right. Well, that's simple, right? Because you don't have to think that hard about it. It's like, oh, I get on the board, I lean heavily one side. But that's not how you ride a wave. That's how you crash, because the wave requires you to constantly tilt that balance back and forth. And it's a dynamic state. Yeah, you can never be too comfortable leaning to one side or another. You constantly have to adapt it to the energy of the wave, and that is changing every minute. That's how life works. The tendency to want things completely black and white is just laziness, really. It's just, I need my dogma to keep me safe, to make me feel that I always have the correct answer, rather than having to figure out what the correct answer is in a case-by-case scenario. And in this case, it's the same thing. I'm equally annoyed with the hardcore, all religions are equally bullshit, as I am with the, no, they are just misunderstood, they are all good stuff. I mean, those people to me are made for each other.
Do you think there's limitations of moderation, though?
In which way?
We're discussing intellectually lazy positions, and I've actually found cultural relativism in many cases to be a lazy view of
yeah.
humanity as a whole.
Of course. And I think, in fact, that's where my stance is. My stance is I tend to be, it's not completely one way, it's not completely the other way, but that does not mean that occasionally you don't need to go really heavily one way or really heavily the other way.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because typically you have the absolutist who are there, it's all black or it's all white, and that's absolute thinking. Then you got the relativists who come in and say, it's not all black and white, it's all contextual, it all depends, there is no greater good or evil, it's all relative. And that too become a dogma. To me, is none of these, all of these are ideologies. Life does not reply to ideologies. Life is life. And sometime it is going to be all white or all black. And then a lot of times you won't. And again, any of those, even the relativist position, end up being a lazy one.
Absolutely. Because, you know, it's a thought process that I would debate with professors on a consistent basis in my classroom was, you know, this conversation of it seemed the hoity-toity intellectual position was that you could never really consider things to be, well, not necessarily objectively bad, but even using the term, you know, specifically evil in a case, or maybe this will not lead to the best course of action.
Sure.
It seemed to be kind of lowbrow to just call things out. Or yeah. There was just like, you know, kind of we're talking about the Islamic position. And this was I did an episode with Thaddeus Russell where we kind of had this conversation about whether or not we could consider ethics to be objective in any sense.
Right.
One of the fears he had was, if I say that Islam is problematic for women because of such, such, and such, that is similar to progressivist views from the early 1900s of trying to dictate if a culture is good or bad. And that almost always inevitably leads to, therefore, we should use government to use force in order to take care of that situation.
Well, I think there's a bathwater and baby there going on, because I think it's, while it's true that the danger is there, and there are clearly plenty of examples of that happening, there's also something to be said for being able to call things for what they are and not just making hiding behind the idea that there is no true objectivity for essentially not calling out things. You know, and while it's true that perfect objectivity may be an illusion to some degree, it's also true that complete relativism is bullshit. So it's a strange, delicate balance that I wouldn't make in the absolute in all cases, but I would call on a case-by-case scenario. At the cost of sounding contradictory, I think that's how you do it. So to me, I don't know, I tend to side more, as much as I am not an absolutist thinker, I do tend to think that in some case, like I give you an example, because otherwise it sounds too abstract, all of this stuff.
Yeah.
I visited in death row in San Quentin Penitentiary, and you know, all the people there are people who are sentenced to die. All the people there have, save for the random case of the wrongly convicted, pretty much everybody has killed somebody, some people in nasty ways. But you know, everybody has a tough history, right? But if you look at those guys, most of those guys, you know, you sit with them and you can probably pick up the fact that maybe so-and-so is a caveman, and if you have something they want and they want it bad enough, they'll bash your head in to get it, you know? But that to me is not screaming ultimate evil. It's just saying, this dude is a bit of a caveman who's willing to kill to get what he wants. Doesn't mean he's not going to be nice to the old lady to cross the street, or he can be sweet to his kids. You know, one doesn't rule out the other. But then at the same time, right there, I would look at somebody else and go, oh, shit, this is a whole different game I'm looking at right now. And I remember asking somebody, I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? You know, and they're like, oh, yeah, that guy. That's Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker. And I was like, oh, okay, now I get the difference, you know? Because even among murderers, not all murders are the same. Some are a mean to an end, which doesn't mean they are good, you know, it's a great choice, or yeah, you should. But, you know, this is not a guy who is by nature evil in every aspect of his life. He's a guy who's by nature obviously has a very strong selfish streak and is willing to make somebody else pay to get what he wants. That's qualitatively on a whole different game compared to the guy like Ramirez, whose whole point is not you have something I want, so I'm going to use whatever means to get it. Is you are something I want, meaning what I feed off is your pain and misery, and essentially I get off on other people's pain. That to me is like, to me, like looking at Ramirez face to face right there is like, okay, now I know what evil looks like. That is evil right there. There's no bullshit argument about lack of objectivity that is going to convince me that that vibe that's right across from me, that person who's sending that energy right across from me, is not 110% evil, because he is. Whereas the other guy, again, he's still a murderer. He's still somebody who made choices that I would definitely disagree with heavily, but I wouldn't consider it evil on the same plane.
That's... and. Actually, I want to kind of go to that point, because it's an interesting one. It's kind of evil for the sake of evil, or evil actions for the sake of a belief system. Right? Mm-hmm. Like that's the separation. And trying to whittle away or understand the difference can always be difficult, because it's kind of a conversation of how much does intent matter, right?
Right.
When a child is blown up by a drone, to the mother, they don't care if that child died for freedom. Or if they died because, you know, someone decided they wanted to kill a kid one day, right?
Right.
Or whatever your definition of freedom is in that case. The importance, though, of intent has to do with whether or not you're going to do that action again. So if I accidentally stab someone in the back with a knife in the kitchen, you know, it's the accident and they can tell the intent. They know I'm not going to repeatedly stab them. But this Ramirez fellow, obviously, he's going to continue the stabbing motion.
Yeah, precisely. And also is, it's like, one is contextual. One is, this guy is an asshole if you happen to have the gold that you want, that he wants. So if you are in that place, good luck if you run into him, because he will kill you. But in another context, he may be the guy who offered you a ride down the street and is sweet to your kids, you know? Another one is always going to be fucked up, because what he wants is pain, is somebody else's suffering. So it's not a hit or miss kind of thing. It's always going to be a bad deal.
When it comes to, you know, psychologists and philosophers, a lot of the disagreement comes into how much is it that our beliefs matter, or are we coming up with ex post facto justifications for the actions we wanted to innately commit, and it is the faith-based system is just something that comes in afterwards to rationalize it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bit of both. It's probably... people tend to find what they want to find within their own faith. I mean, that's why you can have some really sweet, nice Christian or Muslim or Jews or Buddhist or whatever, because they will, that they'll gravitate to the nicer parts of those messages. And you find absolute assholes who just read the same book, but they obviously underline different parts. So there's that part to it. And also, I think there is the fact that still you can only manipulate the text so much. If something keeps telling you over and over again that you need to do something, it's going to be harder to spin it in a radically different way if you keep bumping into the fact that it's telling you in no ambiguous terms to go a different route. So I think there's a bit of both. You know, people do what they want to do with it. And at the same time, some beliefs, some ideologies tend to make it easier to go certain routes versus others.
Yeah, it is a topic, though, that comes to mind only because what I do find is religious moderation for me, or at least like the moderate Christian religion, is really, it's just simply adapting to whatever the values that the culture is starting to hold now, right? So you have... you know, the, I guess, kind of left-wing pope that some secular people are actually adoring now, which I still find a little bit odd, because none of the Catholic priests who molested groups of children have actually had to deal with court cases or anything else. They're still being completely protected. But it's difficult for me to still say religion's fine as long as it's doing that, because if... I think the way by which you get to an answer matters just as much as the answer you have in the beginning. And if the reason why you hold a particular belief is because you believe there's a divine will behind it, then that can then lead to that divine will changing his mind tomorrow. And then now the divine will says it's okay to kill people if you didn't have a rational, reasonable framework to get to arrive at a particular answer.
Right. No, and I think you're absolutely right. You know, that's kind of how the game works. So it's, as usual, it's not an either or kind of thing. It's not a religions make you do this or that, or it's completely an individual thing. And what the message here is really has nothing to do with it, because people are going to do what they want anyway. There's a bit of both going on in there.
Now, I personally find the idea of faith as kind of a detrimental part of, I guess, human non-thinking that is still very abundant within our culture. But I guess I wonder, from someone who's kind of out there, who's, you know, discussing topics of religion with a lot of people in the public, do you think that the faith-based mindset is going to be going away anytime soon?
It is not going to be going away. At the same time, I realize how, and I think it would be helpful for more people to figure out the idea that faith is a dangerous concept in itself. The whole notion of holding on to certain beliefs without any supporting evidence, it's a little tricky. You know, and I'm not saying you have to say, well, in that case, I have to hold opposite beliefs. Is how about you don't hold any beliefs and just have a feeling about how things may be and be open to change your mind as more evidence comes in, you know? That to me is, there's a beautiful thing that Alan Watts calls the wisdom of insecurity. This whole idea that the very fact that you can never be 100% sure of your conclusions, regardless of what the topic may be, is a healthy thing, because it forces you to constantly tread carefully and be ready to change your mind if new evidence comes in. I think that's a very healthy approach. And as healthy as it is, and how simple it may sound in theory, I find it also incredibly hard to see it in a reality, in application, because most people don't like to feel even a minute element of insecurity. They want to feel 100% certain in their conclusions, even when the evidence does not support that at all. Hell, I mean, I see it among scientists. Scientists are supposed to be about that. They are supposed to be about, you know, only the evidence and nothing else. And yet I find the same kind of dogmatism among science-driven people as I find among religious fundamentalists half of the time. You know, they may not be donned in the religious fundamentalist hat anymore, but they think the same way. They have the same insecurities, which make them cling the same way to, I know this to be true because science tells me so, and this is the evidence, when we all know that the evidence is always a tricky business, even that, because there's always evidence that you decided not to look at so much because it didn't fit with your narrative, and you're only cherry-picking the evidence that actually does work, and you may be doing it even unintentionally, just in a completely not even fully realize what you're doing, just because you are emotionally invested in a certain conclusion.
And I think when it comes, though, to the topic of whether it's a worst case for scientists to supposedly act dogmatic versus religion, when we think of religion as a whole, especially Abrahamic religion, we do have a lot of blood on their hands as a result of these things. And an important aspect, though, is, you know, whose side is the government on in these cases? And then you get to generally tell which more amount of violence is going to be used. Because if you take a look at communism over the course of the last 110 so years, the estimates are anywhere from 60 to 120 million people killed for a very specific philosophy that Bernie Sanders considers awesome. That is confusing to me because it's about central power being forced upon large groups of individuals. And so once you have that particular form of faith where you believe that certain individuals have the right to have rights that other people don't have, like the ability to be able to force others to do what they want, that's going to be your the biggest problem possible. Like, if we can get I'm allowed to use violence against you out of the picture, then the conversation becomes a lot more interesting.
Of course. I mean, anytime you feel entitled to squash somebody else's personal choices, I don't mean those choices that affect everybody else. You know, if you start deciding to dump nuclear waste into my water, it's not your freedom to do so. because you are making impossible, you know, that's a different line because you're crossing into squashing my own freedoms through your actions. But if we're talking purely and simply about what you want to do with your own life, the notion that somebody else could or should tell you how to run your life or even force you to make certain choices is just a fascist notion. And regardless of, you know, whether it doesn't matter if it's left-wing or right-wing, it's still totalitarianism in the end. It's still a form of... So to me, that's always the same. Now, of course, it gets trickier in those cases of where exactly do we decide that we draw the line in terms of where does one person freedom ends and where does the other one begin. And, you know, whereas certain cases for me are just very simple and it's very clear, you know, you look at the whole thing of the war on drugs, you don't. You know, the whole notion of regulating somebody else's choices regarding what they want to do with their consciousness, it's crazy totalitarian crap. On the other hand, obviously, the second you decide to get behind the wheel of a car, that's a whole different game. Because now your choice is putting everybody else at, you're making everybody else run the risk of pain for your choices. So it's always, you know, some cases are slam dunks. Other cases are you get into a gray zone where it gets considerably more complicated.
And I'm certainly not attempting to make the case for philosophical pacifism. I just acknowledge self-ownership and that property rights will most likely continue to exist as long as we live in a scarce world. I'm very much a philosophical anarchist because for the life of me, I can't understand why any individual would want to give up their own sense of integrity and autonomy so that a bureaucrat can tell them what to do with their body.
Yeah, exactly. That's where, and that's what's funny to me about so much of the rhetoric. Like, I don't like to subscribe to any political ideology the same way I don't like to subscribe to any ideology, period, because I find that there are always exceptions to every rule. But I always find it funny when everybody, regardless of who you ask, everybody tell you that they are pro-freedom, because, you know, it doesn't sound too cool to say they are pro-tyranny or something. So it's everyone tell you that they are pro-freedom, right?
Yeah.
But then the second you say, well, so that means you are clearly cool with legal prostitution, legal drugs, legal gambling in all forms, and they freak out. They're like, no, that's not what I meant. I'm like, well, I thought you were just talking about being pro-freedom, which means, you know, if you want to give individual rights and grant people the choices of how to run their own life as long as they don't hurt somebody else, what is it to you if somebody wants to lock themselves in a room and shoot up heroin all day long or just, that's their, you know, freedom does not mean just freedom to make the choices you want. It means including freedom of making choices you don't like. And as long as they don't hurt somebody else, then that's what supporting freedom means. But that's usually, that gets the conversation in a really uncomfortable place quickly, because they quickly realize that whatever they said about freedom is bullshit. You know, they don't support freedom, they support certain ideals, and it sounds cool to say that you like freedom.
Yeah, and kind of trying to define from there, okay, I'm for self-ownership and an individual is not initiating force upon me. That's the starter part. And then you try to figure out everything else after that, you know, the important aspects of, okay, well, how do I live a more meaningful and happy life? That's where the subjective preferences come in.
Yeah.
And trying to kind of understand that I kind of enjoy the philosophy of Stoicism, where that which is outside my sphere of influence, if I dedicate my life to that, it's going to inevitably lead to suffering, because whenever good things happen, I can't quite take any responsibility for it. And when bad things happen, I want to try to take responsibility for it, and then I end up feeling like I failed.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely.
Yeah, which is, you know, but of course, in one of the benefits of when you move outside of the dogmatic religious point of view is that it's not so bad to kind of pick and choose certain aspects as long as you're remaining some kind of consistency, because you don't have a fear of eternal damnation after you die.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the stuff, that's totalitarianism right there in religion. That's why, you know, when I'm reading guys like Christopher Hitchens or Dawkins or some of these guys who tend to put all forms of religion on the same level, like they are all the same, to me, that goes back to intellectual laziness. It's like, no, they're not all the same. Something that wants to be the one and only answer is different from something that acknowledges that there may be other answers. Something that wants to squash all other alternatives is very different from something that allows multiple point of views to exist at the same time. They are not all the same thing. It does not mean they are all amazing, that one is going to be amazing or the other one is always horrible, but it does not mean they are simply not all the same. They're just simply not true. Just because you call them religion, you put them under the same heading, that does not make them all the same thing, which is generally why I tend to have less problems with those religious traditions who push their message as one possible message among multiple, rather than the ones who claim to be the one and only and all other alternatives. I don't even need to look at them because I know that only one is right and it's mine, so everybody else who disagrees with me must be wrong. Those are very different ways of approaching the world, and it's, you can't really put them on the same level.
And I had that, I mean, I certainly used to have more of the intellectual laziness when it came to that. You know, I would say like every single religion is equally bad. And I would say almost all religions have the same central problem of kind of that, you know, what can happen after you decide that faith is a virtue. Mm-hmm. But it's how much do you veer away from the truth and humanity after that?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And, you know, you've written extensively about, you know, different, and I hate it when, oh my God, it's so lazy whenever I hear Westerners kind of just say the words, well, Eastern religions teach. I'm like, you know, there's a lot of them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Confucianism and Buddhism, substantially different religions and very different views of authority.
Yeah, big time.
So if you were, though, wrote a book about, you know, making up your own religion, did you not?
Sure. Yeah, because to me, none of those things are, to me, in some way, at the cost of sounding weird, there really is no such a thing as Christianity or Islam or Judaism or Buddhism or Hinduism. There are 3 gazillion people who fall under each one of those headings, but what they believe, what they practice, the human beings they become, the choices they will make are often radically different from one another. You know, the old lady who's Muslim and her way of being Muslim is to be kind to her neighbor and bake cookies for them is not the same as the Islam of Osama bin Laden. Now, I don't know which one is the real Islam as far as being more scripturally correct, but one is a pleasant human being and one is not. And to me, that same thing with all religions, you know, is like, not only when you rightly say Eastern religions, which is a joke, but even if you speak about one religion, if you say Buddhism is, whatever you say after that is bullshit, because there is no such thing as one thing that Buddhism is. There are a lot of different practices and attitudes that go under the name of Buddhism, some which I like, some which I really want. And the same is true for any ism you can think of. I don't believe that there even is such a thing. I think that each person who adopts this way turned them into something idiosyncratic and different, and as such, some I will click with and some I won't.
It is hard, though, to not try and at least attempt to, and I'm either guilty of this or maybe it's not the worst thing, but kind of look at a macro approach of, okay, what have adherence to this specific type of religion done more often than not?
I agree. I think it's useful then to make some generalizations, as long as we understand they are generalizations. And so we're not saying Buddhism is more like, for most of history, most of mainstream forms of Buddhism have gone in this direction. Fair enough, you know, because that is the truth. That's there are facts there, and then you can even see some meaningful facts there that maybe most of Buddhism in terms of the concept of holy war has been very different from Judaism, Christianity, and Islam when it comes to holy war, and you see how that has played out. So you can make some generalizations, as long, again, as we tread very carefully about the generalization, because then the fact will always come back to bite you back in the ass that sometimes you take the generalization just a bit too far and suddenly you are going into fantasy land because you are holding on to something that may not apply to all cases it may even just be a thin majority of cases in which it applies to that one label.
Yeah, and when you also start studying things outside of that one religion, or so for instance, for me, it was, you know, the topic of suicide bombing, where I was seeing this is being used by these, you know, Muslim fundamentalists in these situations, and I was going, wow, it's really odd that just this religion does this. And you just think, wait, no, but martyrdom is a huge aspect of religions as a whole. I mean, all of Christianity is based off of God creates man and creates sin at the same time, because he knows everything's going to happen, so he brings his own son to kill himself.
Yeah.
It's very strange. And but also, just the technology of using suicide bombing was really first started by the Tamil Tigers in Indonesia. And they weren't Muslim. They were actually a mixture of multiple different types of religions, but they had a whole religion based around the idea of martyrdom, which in and of itself is one of the main problems there, or collectivism. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, is like, because again, people like to generalize, right? And it's like, for example, it's fairly true when you look at the history that most, and if you want to really generalize, yeah, you can go back to the Eastern religion bullshit, you know, where you do pack Buddhism, Confucianism, Shinto, you know, Taoism all under one heading, which obviously is problematic. But, you know, if we're generalizing, let's go far with it, right? And you say, look, compared to what had happened in the history of Western religions, you find considerably less cases of the idea of holy war supported scripturally or in history within an Eastern context. And that's mostly factually true. But then, of course, you're going to run into the exceptions, which is why when you take it too far and make a statement like, you know, Eastern religions don't support holy war. Yeah, mostly right, except for, and then you go down the list and you start seeing all the cases where that does not apply and it's not true. And this doesn't mean that the general principle was wrong. No, you're mostly right, but you took it too far and you made it an absolute when it's a relative term. You know, it's like, for the most part, they don't support, and comparatively speaking, they have supported it a lot less. But look at what Shinto did in World War II, look at what, and then you go, oh yeah, okay, there was that, you know.
Yeah, and the annoyance with the Eastern religion thing too is a lot of it is comes from people consider themselves kind of on the left intellectual leaning in America, who try to mask their spiritualism with this idea that because something is old, therefore it's good, and some people in the East believe in something, and it's far-fetched to me, and I don't have that kind of mindset, so it's hard for me to empathize with the idea that because something is old, therefore it's good.
Sure, right. No, absolutely. And yeah, I agree with that for sure.
Well, I've taken up a lot of your time, and I want to thank you for being on the show. And so where you have a lot of different things going on, different podcasts, you have your books. Where could people go to kind of see everything?
I mean, I think in the age of you can ask the great gods of Google and they will reply. You know, you just type somebody's name is and usually things pop up quick. So I think, you know, we always do it. I do it too in podcast, right? You know, where can people find you? The reality is that if they are not able to find you by Googling you, there's a problem, right? Yes. You haven't played your card. So, I mean, yeah, I have, you know, my website in my name. I have a History on Fire podcast website. That's for my history podcast. I have Drunken Taoist. That's for a more colloquial kind of podcast, like what I do in the Drunken Taoist. My books are out there, you know, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, you have a lot out there, and you are quite a bit of a Renaissance man, which is the most respectable type of man to be, because specialization is for ants.
Yeah, indeed.
All right, folks, and that's the show. Hope you enjoyed it. Daniele at least slightly agreed to doing a show on the topic of academia sometime in the near future, and that should be quite interesting. Next up, though, I believe is going to be a show with me and Andrew Crishone, continuing our series on free trade. Most notably, the discussion we'll be having is on China! And that should be a lot of fun. So make sure to subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher, and I will be seeing y'all soon. Song to me and I